Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung.
Big gives form to the future. What an exciting and unlimited statement. Did you know that form giving is the Danish word for design? It means to give form to that which has not yet been given form. In other words, to give form to the world that we would like to find ourselves living in the future. A task more important than ever, as humans are the greatest force shaping the planet today. That's what we talk about in today's episode of the Jung Architecture Talks podcast. We are Katrina
and Diana from Jung.
Our guest today is Kai Uwe Bergmann. Kai, you are fellow of the American Institute of Architects and partner at the Bjarke Ingels Group, also known as simply BIG, based in Copenhagen, Denmark. Besides Copenhagen, BIG is actually based all around the world, from London to Barcelona, as well as in New York City. The group has a bunch of different actors with projects in a lot of diverse locations with a big variety of challenges. Is that right?
Yes, I would say that's a very good summary, both in terms of our global outlook, but also in the challenges that we are working in and hope to work in the future.
In 2006, you became a partner at BIG. So the list of what you do there is impressively long. You bring your architectural expertise to proposals around the globe, head up BIG business development. You oversee the urban scale projects and support the landscape projects. Did I forget anything? And how do you handle all that?
Well, I think what BIG is first and foremost is a collection of very bright, very ambitious, very curious people. And we all wear a lot of different hats. What I've been very fortunate in my last sort of 14 years is to kind of grow all of the different interests that I have. Mm-hmm. And they, even when I was in university, the architecture school was placed next to the business school. And so I would run over and take a few business classes in between the architecture studios. So I've always had a very big interest in the business of things. And I think that when you consider that a contract for an architectural project is also a creative endeavor, you're creating the framework in which your colleagues are working and giving them the freedom to think creatively. So I've always looked at the sort of design management and managing that design creativity as one of my major interests. And I've been able to tack on a few other things that you just mentioned, like urban design projects, landscape projects, through the years.
A few. So before we dive deeper into the form giving and giving form to the future, we would like to know a bit about your personal past. You were born 1969 in Germany, studied architecture at the University of Virginia, and finally graduated at the UCLA. After traveling for 3 years, you collected a lot of material knowledge and then worked for different studios. Where did your journey take you during these 3 years, and how did you form your future after that?
If you're speaking to the 3 years, I was auf der Walz, which is
oh, really?
Yes, it's a sort of romantic idea of being a journeyman, and I think this is coming out of the sort of medieval time where people Junggeselle would be traveling around Europe, collecting different experiences. And then they always have the intention of returning home and bringing that kind of more global experience back to their homes. And I read Hermann Hesse's Narcissus and Goldmund, which was a text that kind of sees two characters, one that is a Junggeselle that goes out auf der Walz and the other that goes into a monastery. The one that is coming back home meets with his brother who has never left and has been sitting in the same place. And what they realize after speaking to each other is that each of them have actually traveled One has traveled physically, the other one has traveled emotionally and mentally. Mm-hmm. And I took a great lesson from that book and have used it as a kind of a guide in the way that I have traveled through architecture.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that. So, I mean, our connection are the Jung architecture talks, I would say, and you've already attended several of our events as a speaker, Life on Stage, and we have accompanied each other since quite a while at interesting different events. The last one was the exhibition opening of Forum Giving at the Danish Architecture Center in Copenhagen last year, so 2019. Forum Giving takes us on a journey across time to sense how the world around us has been shaped from the past to the present and beyond, from the Big Bang to singularity. What do you do in order to imagine a different future from today, and how do you feel that we have a license to imagine such things?
I think that giving form to the future is, in a way, what we all do. It is a responsibility to consider how we actually want to live, as opposed to just inheriting how our forefathers and elders have done it. And so I think that by thinking about the future, what Bjarke, in sort of his own travels and sort of his guiding principles, one that comes up very often is the author of Neuromancer, William Gibson, and who stated that the future is all around us every single day. It's just not evenly distributed. And by that, he means that in little bits and pieces, you can see where the future is heading and how people would like to live and work and play. So we are, through each of our projects, I would say, taking sometimes steps and at other times leaps into that future by looking and listening and collecting all of those futures that are around us every single day. Mm. And what we tried to do with Form Giving in the exhibition and a soon-to-be-released book is to show through 100 of our projects those steps and leaps that we've taken.
And then also being able to actively change or form our own future in, you know, like watching, listening, constructing creatively,
and oftentimes, you know, history is a great guide as well. So things have sometimes been better than they are now. Mm-hmm. If we just think of energy consumption, we were much better at using existing kind of passive tools as opposed to the more active technologies that we have created. And so I think it's, again, just a continual kind of learning that we are looking for, and we also know what we don't know. So it's also about assembling the different knowledges and the different specialties that we also look for wherever we work. And then collectively, you kind of are able to form that future, informed through the past, but then you still need to very much find how new technologies and how new ways of working, new ways of building will impact the way that we build and the way that we design in the future.
And how does your work, like with Form Giving, shape you? Do you kind of feel as if you are able to predict the future?
I wouldn't go so far as to say predict the future. I do think that as you meet other people who are on their own sort of paths, I'll use one example. We are working very closely with a 3D printing manufacturer. So this is someone who builds these very large scale 3D printers. And, you know, the manufacturer is doing a lot of Forschung research, is doing a lot of tweaking, but also may not be asking all of the questions that may be important as to thinking about how this technology can actually be useful and implemented. So we help in a way them to, we're in that situation kind of like a midwife that's helping the process of creating and manufacturing the 3D printer into something that is more, it's more useful for the profession and ways that will then impact us in the way that we design. And, you know, history shows us that when reinforced concrete and steel and glass were suddenly materials that were used in a new way, modernism blossomed. With the invention of the elevator, of course, new heights were reached. And I think that that's an exciting place to be, and one that certainly shapes the types of buildings that you can design.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's great to see how construction is changing with this combination of handcrafted things, but also 3D printing technology. That's really amazing to see how this changes. So how was the exhibition organized in Copenhagen or the exhibition itself, actually? And what was the visitors' part over there? Didn't you like transform the entire Danish architecture center?
Yes. So we weren't bashful. We looked at the entire building, which of course is designed by OMA, as our, say, canvas. So the building is made up and is, of course, of sort of stacked volumes. It has little galleries. It has a large exhibition forum. It has a major stair, as well as an escalator. Mm-hmm. And so there are very many different parts. And we looked at the building kind of sectionally. And we started to organize the exhibition around the building, the use of the building, mm-hmm. And these different spaces. So you had mentioned that the exhibition starts with the Big Bang. So we literally start, you know, all of that time ago. And we then use the stairs to kind of create a kind of a time machine or a kind of accelerator, so that each step in the beginning were, you know, sort of 100 billion years and then tens of billions of years, mm-hmm. and then 100 millions of years. And with each plateau, you decelerated, you shifted gears. Mm-hmm. What was very interesting in a sort of Da Vinci Code way is that the stairs and the landings perfectly worked out, so that we could actually decelerate at each landing to the point where the last 10 steps were the last 10 years of Big's production. Mm-hmm. So then you end up on the top forum, which is the largest space. And that is where we had sort of 70 projects exhibited. And what we're saying is that as you move through the history of the Big Bang to the history of Big's formation, you then have these 70 projects that offer you a glimpse as to how these projects, those programs, our solutions actually start to give form to that future, and how, you know, through drawings, through models, and through narratives, how each of those projects is taking us and inching us closer to the future that we would like to live in. And then I'll just sort of complete it. So then there was the sort of once again moving down to the ground floor, and we realized in the last 4 years that in order for us to address the future of form making, we needed to not only address it architecturally, we needed to think of it holistically. Mm-hmm. So we also added landscape engineering, planning to our architectural abilities. And we call it the Big Leap, landscape, engineering, architecture, planning. And it was through the Big Leap that we now have been on for the last 4.5 years that we would be able to tackle projects like, 3D robotic printing, AI learning, and sensing technologies, and then of course migration, moving to potentially habiting the moon or Mars. And only with that holistic approach to design would we be able to work on projects like that.
But thinking about that, the exhibition is supposed to travel actually into different cities as well. So the starting Big Bang would always be a different one, no?
It is moving, and it was to have opened actually this past June in Milano. In April, this past April in Milano, which of course was not to be. And so it has moved to the opening of the Salone next April in Milan. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping to also take it to Shanghai. So it is a traveling exhibition, which is similar to Hot to Cold. Our last exhibition moved from the United States to Frankfurt, the Deutsche Architekturmuseum. And before that, Yes is More, which also traveled to quite a few places. So this is our way of engaging with connecting with local designers and with the local community. It's a really great way, I think, for us to celebrate the work and the hard work that all the bigsters have been putting into the projects, and then to also have collaborations and conversations with the local designers and clients where these exhibitions actually go.
Yeah, and it absolutely emphasizes the way you work. So, you know, spreading it out to everyone, everyone understands how you work with projects, with different professions, with the group of people at BIG. And during our research, we actually found press statements, for instance, like, "We're only limited by our imaginations, but BIG's imagination is limitless." No wonder we found statements like that. Or another statement was, "The world would be a lesser place without it, and future generations will be better for it." I mean, you got to get to the point and collect statements like that.
Yes.
So related to form giving and BIG, we also found a contradictive term saying pragmatic utopia. It was even mentioned as a concrete step towards a world that is more like your dreams at BIG. What does that mean?
So pragmatic utopia was, I think, coined and was also a founding kind of principle for Yes is More. And Yes is More is this sort of positive approach to design, because so much of development is very NIMBY, not in my backyard. And you do receive a lot of negativity when you start talking about designing and thinking about places. People are just very resistant to change. And so it became this idea that you needed to show the benefits, and you needed to not only look at the world through your own lens, but to understand everyone's different perspective, and then to actually ask the question, what is it that you would like to see? And why can't the project actually do both? It can be and succeed on the kind of criteria that you've set for yourself, but you also actually are able to address many of the concerns of the citizens in that area or the adjacent neighbors.
Different so, big banks.
So the pragmatic utopia was that you could, and this goes back also to history, that there were many utopias shown in the past 50, 60 years, all of which are achievable to different degrees. And we felt that we wanted to bring an element of pragmatism, which, again, when you look at sort of Denmark and the sort of Danish value system, a lot of it is based on very pragmatic kind of values and decisions. So this idea that form is not for form's sake, form is actually something that is very thoughtful and is very and has a lot of rationality behind it. And if you can actually demonstrate that the forms that you are creating and making have very specific reasons for being the way that they are, communicating that and getting buy-in makes it a lot easier to actually to create the future.
As we heard, I mean, you use a lot of different technologies and you introduce a kind of new vocabulary as a new technology as well. Do you consider language as a technology that is also a building block in your projects? And is it an influence to your space?
Yeah, I've always actually been very amazed at Bjarke. You know, English is a second language. And I find that Bjarke uses language and creates narratives that are so skillful and so they are building blocks.
Yeah, absolutely.
When we consider that he wrote every single word in Yes Is More and is doing so again in Form Giving, you know, these words and these narratives are very much the same, have the same value and the same kind of currency as the designs themselves. And when you actually go back and think about you know, the office prior to Big that Bjarke founded was Plot, and Plot, you know, is not only a plot of land, and it is not only a plotter that plots out drawings, but it's also a plot, the narrative, the story. And so for Bjarke, I think this idea that a design has to work as a site-specific concept, it has to work as a drawing or as a kind of you know, architectural exercise, and it has to work as a plot, that you're creating a story for that person or organization. That I think is fundamental to still everything that we do today.
Your next book should be a dictionary. I would learn it by heart.
Yes. Entitled Bigipedia.
Bigipedia, that's good.
Bigipedia. So, Kai, the smart combination of technologies surely shapes a huge part of our future. And as you just mentioned, 3D printing as a supplement to craftsmanship, what do you think will craftsmanship mean in the future?
Yeah, I think this has been a question since Gutenberg created the press. I think that just as...
we don't have so old questions.
Yeah. I think that we've always been asking ourselves what happens when technology kind of goes through certain paradigm shifts. And what about the previous means or ways of working? And I think that you will again, you need everything, and everything teaches you. When I was working as a carpenter or a stonemason or a glassblower, those are trades that are as old as the Iron Age or the Bronze Age.
Or our question.
Glassblowing was created by the Phoenicians and then finessed by the Romans. Uh-huh. And they still use the exact same tools as the Romans did when they blow glass. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is something that will inherently always be there and exist. And there will be people that will their lives will be centered around those crafts. We need them. And so at the same point, we also need to advance, and we need to integrate newer types and forms of working, and hopefully be able to bridge all of these different eras.
That will be great.
I guess we also need the knowledge of craftsmanship in order to translate it into a technology such as 3D printing.
Yeah, many of the issues of 3D printing actually come back to the idea of masonry.
Yeah.
And how you actually when you build a wall, if it's not straight, it will fall over.
Really?
and we got the first page of your dictionary.
Yeah, is exactly the same. So when you have the same fundamental challenge of gravity, you end up with a lot of the same kind of forces that you need to work with. And I think that's something that I find both refreshing that we are dealing with very similar things, and it's also exciting to be speaking on a sort of a kind of more philosophical level of what these technologies mean as they enter the whole sort of ecosystem. And the hope and desire with 3D printing is that we will be able to reduce the cost of construction to a fraction of what it exists and is now. And mm-hmm. So we would be able to deal with affordable housing and housing for everyone. That again is a kind of pragmatic utopia that we see and are interested in achieving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of good to know that a profession like craftsmanships are surviving or also needed for the future in order to build it.
Yes.
What are you most recently contributed to?
I'm very excited by two projects here in New York, one of which we've been working on for the past year and a half, entirely pro bono. So that is looking at a 2.5 mile stretch of interstate or freeway, which is going through literally our backyards. And it was built in the 50s to have a 50-year lifespan. So it was only supposed to last until 2000. It is crumbling. And it's the sort of Brooklyn Heights Promenade, the BQE, as it is affectionately called here in New York. And so it's a roadway. And you wouldn't expect an architect to be interested in designing roadways, but When you understand that the roadway and the issues of it coming through a neighborhood and in many ways decimating connections and really, you know, America is a kind of poster child of 1950s, 60s freeway design destroying many, many cities and cutting different neighborhoods off. So how can we learn from these last 70 years to actually design freeways humanistically and to make sure that the connections are there, not only for people, but for, let's even say, bugs or wildlife or that the ability to coexist. And we call this social infrastructure. So that's one project, the kind of rethinking of the BQE. We call it the BQP. Because we're creating a 12-acre park where there is only noise and fumes and cars now. And then we are soon to find out about a competition we've entered for the Brooklyn Bridge reimagining, rethinking this 140-year-old structure or 50-year-old structure to reimagine what it could look like and how you would use it in the future. So they will actually let us know in about 2 days who the winner is.
Crossing the fingers.
Yeah, thank you. So those are both, you know, non-architectural projects. They're both urban projects. And again, I work on a lot of these urban projects from the New York office and very, very exciting to be working on such, I think, historically significant structures to the city.
Yeah, coexisting is also a really interesting topic. I think we could record an own podcast about coexisting.
or rewilding our cities.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the power plant in Copenhagen is another attempt for us to kind of take what is normally gray infrastructure, a power plant. No one wants to live there. No one would even think of any living creature wanting to be near a power plant. And yet we've created this very verdant, very lush kind of green ski hill. And now it's actually where people spend their Friday and Saturday nights is on the power plant.
And it's one of the tourist spots for architects traveling to Copenhagen. I mean, yeah.
Absolutely. Kai, do you have any good advice for our listeners concerning our future?
I think we are, of course, in a very sort of historic moment. I don't know if any of us, besides our oldest elders, have experienced anything as the situation that we find ourselves in right now. I think the uncertainty of not knowing when this would end is, of course, is a big issue. And what's also I find remarkable is that I remember my grandmother, who was born in 1903, talking about die Grippe, or the flu. Mm-hmm. And what I didn't realize, but I do now, is that she was speaking of the Spanish influenza of 1918 to 20. And she spoke of it in terms of just, you know, those were the worst of times, or those were the time. And she was a child, so she was not able to go outdoors, or, you know, her life was very constrained. The family, I'm sure, suffered as well economically. So this is our Grippe in a way. And we have to find out what and how the future will be after this. I do hope that, again, when I speak of steps versus leaps, I hope that this is a moment of reflection that will allow us to take great leaps that would have otherwise taken decades to do. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to say, like, the next decade is really the next 5 years, because we can potentially do as much in the next 5 years as we would have taken 10 or even 20 years to do.
Absolutely.
Talking about all this past, present, and future, I would like to add a question. If there's a person you could have lunch with, who would it be, and what would you talk about with this person?
My grandmother. and ask her about the Grippe, because I never had a chance to actually ask her that much. It was just said in passing. Mm-hmm. And to spend more time with her. I lived with her when I graduated from university, and she was 93. To think of having a 20 sort of 4-year-old living in your apartment as a 93-year-old is remarkable. That's where I worked as a carpenter, was in my hometown of Einbeck for a summer, and she put a roof over my head and cooked me lunch every day. So that's the person that I would ask to lunch.
Wonderful. Answer from the heart.
Yeah. Kai Uwe, as usual, it was a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for spending your time with us. We really hope that we will be able to meet soon in person again, wherever, in China, in Germany, in the US, wherever in this world. Thank you so much. And enjoy your time with your family now, because I think this is also a special time for you. Usually you wouldn't have been able to spend so much time with your daughter, no?
That's exactly right. It's the silver lining in all of this is the time with family. And she's a year and a half old, so I've gotten to see her first steps and hear her first words.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm getting emotional.
I couldn't have imagined missing out on those. We are trying to make the best of it, and really the hope here is that that we do very soon have a chance to reconnect. I look forward to it.
Yeah, those kids are certainly growing up in very special times and
yes,
special surroundings, and looking at people in very special shapes, being covered all over. So greetings to New York City, and it was, as Diana already said, a pleasure talking and listening to you. We're all looking forward to soon get the chance to see more of Big's form giving. The catalog exploring the notion of form giving will be published by Taschen by the end of the year 2020. Is that true?
Actually, it'll be out, yeah, in about 3 to 4 months.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Perfect.
Wonderful. Yep. In addition, we invite you all to the upcoming Jung Online Lectures and Jung Architecture Talks podcasts. Look them up on jung.de/architects and tune in.